the Women's Football Podcast, shining a light on the women's game.
Hello, welcome along to a special Christmas edition of the Women's Football Podcast. I'm Hamish, this is Kieran.
Hello mate, Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you, pal. We've got a bumper show, haven't we?
We have indeed. Do you want to tell the good people what we've got for them?
I certainly will. Plenty of moves in the WSL, of one of which is Carly Telford, and you managed to catch up with her. Mark Sampson is the new England manager. He named his first 30-player squad for the training camp in La Manga. We will have a little look at that, plus talk to one of our friends of the show who will be in the opposition lineup when Mark takes his first game as manager of England, when they face Norway. We'll be speaking to Ada Hegerberg. That was you again, by the way. Brian Maguire will give us the latest from Germany, and then we've been neglecting the W League down in Australia, so we're going to rectify that. We sent our old pal Alicia Ferguson to have a little chat with Lisa Devanna. So there we go. Let's get started.
The Women's Football Podcast. Follow the podcast on Twitter at WFPod.
Okay, it would not be one of our podcasts without a look at the moves in the WSL. And Kieran, they all centre on Arsenal.
Yeah, they do. A few surprise moves this week. One in particular that really caught our eye, wasn't it? The Ellen White move to Notts County Ladies. I think that surprised a lot of people. We'd heard rumours about some of the players that had already left. But Ellen White, I don't think many people knew about that one, and certainly was one out of left field.
Certainly solves a problem for Notts County Ladies because they struggled for goals last season.
Yeah, we talked about it, didn't we, when we looked... Well, I talked about it with Helen and Ish. Alicia, when we spoke a few months ago. And one of the areas that we said that Notts County would need to address was up front, and they've got one of the best in the business in this country, Ellen White, an international for England, still only 24 years old, lots of years ahead of her, and a real coup for them. I don't actually think, if you look through the team, there's not many better that they could have got, really, is there?
Absolutely not. Let's talk about the person who's come in. Siobhan Chamberlain from Bristol Academy, a big blow for Bristol.
Yeah, huge blow. And you do wonder if Mark Sampson's departure as England manager played a part in that. Obviously, Siobhan, I know, worked very hard under Mark. And I don't really know what her thinking was in terms of maybe she wanted to move back to London. She's obviously played for Chelsea before, and I think she was at Fulham before that a long time ago. So it's a good move for her. You know, it's going to be interesting to see how her and Emma Byrne compete for places, because they're two, you know, really good keepers, two top-class international goalkeepers, and I think many would agree that Siobhan has arguably been the keeper of the WSL since it started. But Emma Byrne, very experienced, you know, been in that Arsenal team for about a decade. So it's going to be interesting to see how those two compete. But really good move for Arsenal, and it'll be interesting to see how Siobhan does there competing against Emma.
It's a little bit worrying for Bristol. Obviously, lost their manager, lost their number one keeper, and all the players that seemingly up for grabs, they haven't got a manager to take advantage of that.
Well, you'd hope that they were looking to address that, wouldn't you? I would imagine that the club president is working very hard at trying to get a new manager in as soon as possible. As you say, the players are due back for pre-season training in January, so you want to try and have the core of your squad by the time the team comes back for pre-season, so that that player can, or those players can, mould in with the rest of the team and, you know, get to know the teammates and get to know the tactics of that manager. So it'll be interesting. I think Bristol will be looking to get a new manager in as soon as possible, so that that person can start to recruit the players that they want.
Let's go back to Arsenal, and a couple more have left as well.
Yeah, Gemma Davison has gone to Liverpool, and I think that was one, while a little bit of a surprise, wasn't necessarily a shock. Gemma wasn't in the team as much as maybe she would have liked in the second half of the last WSL season. Came on a lot from the bench. And as I said in our last podcast, Gemma's one of the most feared wingers in England. She is absolutely rapid. She's got very quick feet. She's got magnets on the end of her boots, so the ball literally does stick to her feet. So it's a blow for Arsenal, absolutely no doubt about that whatsoever, but a very, very big signing for Liverpool, and it shows that they are looking to, you know, really take a stranglehold of that trophy that they got hold of last season.
It's also good to see Liverpool buying English, buying British.
Yeah, obviously follows on from Martha Harris, doesn't it? Martha was a left-back for Notts County Ladies, England under 20 international. They've now followed that with Gemma Davison, who has now recently been called into Mark Sampson's first training squad for Lomanga. So, absolutely, it's interesting. You've obviously got players like Gemma Bonner, Farron Williams, Tash Dowie. There's a real good core of English players there.
There is, and Mark Beard has said he's going to look for a couple more. But let's have a look at the reaction of Arsenal fans, having lost so many key players.
Matt Beard.
What did I say?
Mark Beard.
Oh, that's his brother. Easy mistake to make. But anyway, let's have a look at the reaction on our Twitter feed. I'll start. Rachel Stack, who of course we have a lot of communication with, she said, "A club that has always been ahead of the times. I hope now they don't run out of time to set up shop for next season."
Okay, and Holly Allen said, "They must have a plan. I hope so anyway. We'll need to bring in a few big names of their own. Next year will be a transitional year."
Certainly right. Emma Clark says, "Slightly worried, but was expecting lots of movement, but want to see more signings. Lost a lot of my fave players, though."
And Tor Lindsay said, "I'm gutted. What are we doing wrong? I like Kerr and Akers, but losing the players we have is tough for fans."
And just finally, Melissa McElroy said, "Slightly worried. Most of my favourite players have left. Shelley better have something good coming." See, that's a popular message from Arsenal fans, that they're kind of okay with the players leaving as long as sufficient quality comes in.
Well, they need that quality, don't they? Because they want to be competing with Man City, they want to be competing with Liverpool, and I guess they'll want to be competing with Notts County as well when you look at the fact they've signed Ellen White. They've also got the issue of the Champions League as well. They've got a big tie coming up, a big quarter final against Birmingham City Ladies. They're losing a few of their players. There are a number of rumours around that they could potentially lose more. So they do need to bring reinforcements in, because if they've got a big game against Birmingham to potentially move into the semi-finals of the Champions League, to be able to compete in the next WSL season, they need to bring recruits in, because they don't have a team that would be strong enough to be able to compete with Man City and Liverpool.
It all promises to make a very exciting season. But one move we were very interested to keep an eye on was Carly Telford, and we managed to catch up with her when she joined her new club.
Okay, so we're delighted to be joined by Carly Telford, who this week announced that she would be moving clubs. She has signed for Notts County Ladies Football Club from Chelsea. Carly, thanks for joining us on the show. Tell us how the move came about and how excited you are to be joining.
Well, like you say, obviously leaving Chelsea last year, it kind of opened a few doors into where I wanted to go to and what I wanted to do. If I'm honest, I was probably prepared to leave the country when a lot of people spoke to me at the FA Awards and that, and asking what I was doing. I think I wanted something fresh, something new. I didn't really know who the England manager was going to be, so again, that kind of threw a few ifs, buts, and maybes. But I was pretty much destined to maybe go to Sweden or Germany. I was pretty had my heart set on that, and then a couple of opportunities in the past couple of weeks that have cropped their head up, and with the announcement of Mark being the New England manager, it's probably important that I do stay in my home country and give my best chance to impress him. Like you say, it was a bitty season last year. I think I might have played against Bristol once, I might not have even played against Bristol, so again, I didn't really do myself any justice there. So I think that again, the country was the right thing for me to do, and getting the opportunity to work with Rick again and being in a full time environment is very important for me. Again, I just want to play football. That's all I want to do. I want to become a better goalkeeper, a better player, and a better person. And I think the environment that Notts will create will allow me to do that. So I feel that it was the right move for me, and hopefully working with Pilks, the men's coach full time. At least three times a week with him, working with the 21 boys, and then working with the girls as well. I can only cross my fingers to make me a better player. And again, that's all I want to do. So that's my reason.
Of course, and you mentioned there that you worked with Rick at Leeds United when you were goalkeeper up there. Was he quite a big influence in you making the decision to move there?
Yeah, I mean, it was when I first got the call, I was like, oh, because automatically, like, you have a history, a successful history with someone. It's very hard to deny that your heart kind of tells you it's the right thing to do. Of course, there's a lot to weigh up with a place like Notts. Again, in women's football, a lot can be said, and a few things can follow through with it. So it was a, but knowing Rick, when I've spoke to my parents, friends, family, it's just been a no-brainer. Whenever he's promised anything, he's always followed through. Whether that's you're going to play, you're not going to play, whether it's stuff you want to hear or don't want to hear, he's very honest. And that's what I've always loved about Rick. I can't speak highly enough of him and teaming together along with Colin. Again, what we had at Leeds, I'm sure Ellen was probably the same, when you kind of think that, yeah, this is something that's going to make us make successful. It might not be the first year, of course. We all want to be successful and make things happen straight away, but we have no two ways about it. It's going to take time for us to gel. No doubt he's bringing in new players. Again, he won't tell me who they are because he doesn't like to discuss it. But I'm sure he brings in strong players, and I think, like you say, we'll be there and thereabouts in amongst it all. But hopefully, like with Leeds, it took us a couple of years to get going, and we were under the radar for a little bit. But once he gets the team gelled and striving towards the same goals, there's no doubt he can make a team and players very successful.
It's exciting times, isn't it, for Notts County? Obviously, the signing of Ellen White last week, and you've already got established internationals there like Sophie Bradley and obviously England captain Casey Stoney. That must be really exciting for you to be able to go to a club like that and a professional environment as well.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you've got to look at who's there and what they did last year and who they did it with. And like you say, some of the names, obviously, were having the England captain there, Bradders and KB. You've got probably your three starting players right there for England. And like you said, they didn't have but they also had players that nobody had heard of either. And to be able to gel them together and like you say, get something out of it, like an FA Cup, a League Cup final, just shows the strength that Vic has got in a small amount of time that he had. So I think, again, he will be, I'm sure there'll be players that probably might be surprised that aren't there, people that he will re-sign, people that will come into the setup that people might not know of. I'm sure he's probably speaking to lots of different people to make sure that it's a successful year. So I just hope that, for me personally, it's all about becoming a better player, and that hopefully the team success comes along with that.
And obviously, an opportunity with a New England manager you already mentioned earlier to try and get yourself into that squad.
Yeah, like it's kind of like a fresh slate. I mean, whenever I spoke to Hope, it's not that I wasn't good enough. It was kind of an experience thing, and I was injured a lot of the time, so I never really got. It was my own problem, basically, trying to get a good run in the setup. Like you say, whenever I'd maybe have a good run in the league or do myself some justice of maybe getting into the team and maybe getting myself some minutes, I'd get injured or something would happen. Or so it was kind of a mixture of things, but like Hope, she did believe in me when I spoke to her, and she wouldn't have picked me if she didn't. But like you say, it's a fresh start, a new start, and hopefully I can have a good effect on Mark and try and break into that three and push on, because like you say, I'm 26, I'm not getting any younger. The only thing that's probably on my side is that when I look at the likes of the people who are ahead of me, I think Brownie got her first start and run in the team when she was about 25, 26 in the Euros. I think KB was about 27 when she started, and she's there and thereabouts, and she could be possibly getting started in the next couple of, well, she's obviously had a decent year this year, getting a few starts, and that's probably going to continue this year. So I think probably now is the time to make waves. For me, I'm 26, I'm not young anymore, and it's time to really kick on, stay injury-free, and give myself a really, real good shot. 2 years at Notts hopefully will put me in amongst it and allow me to do that.
You make me feel so old, Carly. You're talking about being 26 and not old. I'm 31 in January, so thanks very much for that. You mentioned Rachel Brown-Finnis and KB, and obviously another one is Siobhan Chamberlain. I mean, there's some really healthy competition in England for goalkeepers, isn't there? Does that sort of drive you on even more, knowing that, you know, you really have to raise your game to be able to compete with the likes of those players?
Oh, definitely. I mean, I think we've got one of the success. I mean, you just have to look at the youngsters as well. You've got the likes of Lizzie.
Mary Earps.
There's people around Ash Baker who obviously is in the country, but she's been around the setup. So you've got the youngsters pushing you on, and then obviously you're always chasing the people at the top. for us competitive live in this country, I think it's getting a lot better, and I think hopefully that will only get better. Like you say, Mark's putting his things of to do this year is to have a full-time goalkeeper coach, and I think that's only going to again improve the likes of the goalkeepers. I don't think we've ever really had anything like that, of someone who looks after us on a full-time basis. It's kind of just whenever you turn up to camps, or if you're lucky enough to have a goalkeeping coach in your setup that can be there, that's all it's been. So to have someone who's going to be there and helping, just like having a coach like all the other players do, it's only going to make goalkeeping in this country more competitive, which is again, That's all us goalkeepers want. We just want to be looked after like everybody else.
Excellent.
So hopefully, I think that the way Mark's going forward with things and the way the goalkeepers are in this country, it's only going to get better. And I need to obviously keep striving forward with that. So moving along with people and kind of starting to step over people rather than just stepping alongside them or striding behind them. So again, I hope that Notts County and this year might be that year for me to do so.
Well, very exciting times for English goalkeeping, and also exciting times for you, Carly. We do genuinely wish you the very best at Notts County, and I do hope from a personal perspective that you can fight your way back into that England squad.
Thank you, Hugh, and I really appreciate it.
The Women's Football Podcast. Listen to the podcast via SoundCloud. SoundCloud.com/WFPod.
Okay, Kieran, Mark Sampson has picked his first England squad. It's a 30-player squad, which is going to La Manga. Some familiar faces and some not-so-familiar faces. I will quickly run through the squad. Keepers are Karen Barsley, Rachel Brown-Finnis, Siobhan Chamberlain. Defenders, Laura Bassett, Gemma Bonner, Sophie Bradley, Lucy Bronze, Rachel Daly, Jilly Flatty, Alex Greenwood, Steph Houghton, Gemma Rose, Alex Scott, Demi Stokes, Dunia Susi, Corinne Yorston. In midfield, Anita Asante, Jade Moore, Jordan Nobbs, Jill Scott and Farrell Williams. And up front, Eni Aluko, Karen Carney, Danielle Carter, Jamie Davison, Natasha Dowie, Tony Duggan, Leanne Sanderson, Jodie Taylor and Ellen White. Your thoughts on that?
My thoughts are Mark Sampson has been listening to our podcast, mate.
Well, who doesn't?
Well, no, jokes aside, I think I share the views that a lot of people put out on Twitter. They're very encouraged by the squad that he's picked. Granted, he has an opportunity to look at a lot of players. He's got a 30-player squad for a training camp. He won't have that opportunity to pick that many players for a competitive international. But I think it's encouraging. He recognises that a lot of players are going to start with a clean slate. You look at Gemma Davison, we've mentioned her before. Only one previous cap in 2009 for England. It's about time she had a look, as we've discussed already. A very feared winger, a very feared wide player in this country, and she deserves a chance. I've lost count the number of times that we've championed Jodie Taylor. We obviously had her on the show before. She's scored goals wherever she's been, whether it be in Birmingham or in Sydney or in Gothenburg. She's obviously just signed for Washington Spirit for next season's NWSL as well, so she's going to have a chance to prove herself in another league. Leanne Sanderson has had a three-year exodus after, obviously, her issues that she had with Hope Howe. She's back in the squad. But it's also encouraging to see some young players that maybe people aren't so familiar with, the likes of Demi Stokes, who came through Sunderland's Centre of Excellence before going out to play in America, and Rachel Daly, who people may remember her as a defender for Lincoln Ladies, but she's been playing quite successfully out in the States in the colleges as a striker. So, yeah, really encouraged, mate. I think it's going to be interesting to see who he picks for the friendly match that they have against Norway at the end of that training camp. But I think overall, very, very encouraged by what he's put together.
Certainly from my point of view, obviously the phrase wiping the slate clean has been used an awful lot. I quite like the fact that he's called up Corinne Yorston. It was obviously great at left back for Bristol Academy last season, had a great season. I remember a couple of goals, an absolute belters of goals against Everton. You know, a lot of people saying, oh, you know, a little bit of bias, obviously, going back to his former club. But you've got to look at these players, you know, if they can add something, even though they're 30, 31, why not? Give them a chance. You know, if they let you down in this friendly, so be it. But it's good to see him giving players a chance, not just young players, but experienced players as well.
I don't care if people say it's bias. It's really not a case of whether the, you know, Corinne has played for him at Bristol or not. Corinne Yorston had a very good season for Bristol last year. She is a naturally left-footed player, as is Alex Greenwood, and I'm really pleased to see her in there as well. But I think Corrin deserves it. You know, Mark is not going to go into that England job and pick players that he doesn't think are going to come in there and do a job for him. Gemma Rose is another player that we mentioned in our last podcast. We said we don't expect it to be long before she's selected. She happens to be selected in the first squad. She may not be selected for the first World Cup qualifier that England have, but this is a chance for Mark to see what players are capable of. You know, there are a lot of players that can talk the talk. There are, you know, that will be an opportunity for him to see if they can walk the walk. We know that there are characters in there. There are high-profile players such as Leanne and Gilly who haven't been in the squad for various reasons that we don't know about. But I'm pleased that players like Corrin are in there because they deserve it. She's not there because she's a Bristol Academy player. She's there because she is a good player. As you say, she offers something different. We've played Steph Horton as a left-back in the last year to 18 months, and Steph's done a great job out there.
And Lucy Bronze as well.
And Lucy Bronze, and occasionally Alex Scott. So they're all right-footed. And we've discussed this before. I like to see a naturally left-footed player playing the left-back. I'm not saying you drop Steph. I just think Steph is such a great all-round player. You play her in the centre of the park, whether that's as a centre-back or as a centre-midfielder. And she has more of an influence on the game, which then allows you to bring in a Corrin Yorston or an Alex Greenwood, who are naturally left-footed and offer you that natural width at left-back.
Absolutely. I think if you ask any manager, you cannot have too many left-footed players. And whilst I have been championing Corrin Yorston, obviously I do have slight bias with my Everton role, but I am absolutely delighted, and I would like to place on record my huge congratulations to Alex Greenwood. She had an up-and-down season last season, played at centre-half quite a bit, but again, can't have too many left-footed centre-halves. But she had a few injuries as well, so a bit of an up-and-down season, as I say. So it's great for her to finally get that recognition because she's been a regular in the under-23s, under-19s as well. And I actually spoke to her for our website and she just was speechless. So it's
that
nice.
That's not a very good piece that you got out of that.
No, I had to wait and coax her and suggest a few things to say. But she was made up, and you know that's what we want. That's what we want to see with this new England squad. We want to see players excited to be in with a chance of representing their country. But it gets down to business very quickly because they've got a really good test in Norway.
They will do, yeah. They will absolutely, obviously, finalists of Euro 2013. But it was an opportunity for us to chat to one of our good friends and WF blogger, Ada Hegerberg, not only about that game, but about her recent performances for Tabina Potsdam and for the women's national team as well.
Excellent. So let's have a listen to that.
Okay, so I'm delighted to be joined by our WF blogger once again, Ada Hegerberg, on this episode of the Women's Football Podcast. Ada, thanks once again for joining us. It's been a busy few months for you. Let's cast our mind back to two rather important matches that you played your part in against Lyon in the Champions League, ending up as winners in that time, maybe as underdogs, but an incredible result for you guys.
Yeah, it was an incredible win for us, and it meant a lot for our confidence, and now we believe that we can go all the way.
You lost the first leg at home. You have to go to Lyon, who haven't lost at home for a number of years. Be honest, did you genuinely think that you could go to France and overturn the deficit?
To be all honest, I think we all thought that we have a tiny, tiny chance if we all stand up as a team, and that's what we did. We fought hard from the very beginning to the very end. So, and we were fighters. That's the thing. We stood up for each other, and that was the key for the win, I think.
How much of a challenge was it for you coming up against a big defender like Wendy Renard? You played the sort of the lone striker role. Was it a difficult task for you?
It was hard. She's a world class defender, and she's very smart, and it was a hard task, and I felt alone sometimes, but I just had to think quickly and think smart in my movements so I could like get and create chances, and but it was a tough defender to play against. I have to be honest to say that it was really tough, and it was really funny, of course, because I never met such big opponents as Lyon before.
Absolutely.
So such a great experience.
Would you say, I know that you obviously got to the final of Euro 2013, but would you say the win over Lyon was the highlight of your club career?
I think that has to be the biggest highlight in my career, yeah. In the club, of course. Coolest games I ever played in my club career, no doubt.
And that must give you great confidence going into the next round against Torres of Italy. Obviously, you've overcome a very big side in Lyon. Do you guys now go into the competition thinking, we can really win this now?
Yeah, of course. We believe in ourselves. And when we can beat the best as we did against Lyon, we have big confidence in ourselves. But we have to be humble and get down to earth again and training hard and work hard for it. Because it's never going to be easy to get to the final when you have those opponents today.
And obviously, in the German league, you're about to, or by the time this podcast comes out, you'll be going into your winter break. Have you been pleased with the first half of the season for Turbine? You're up there in the right sort of positions in the league, fighting for that title. Are you pleased with how it's gone so far?
It's been a great half season for the team, I think. I had a bit sketchy start with my injury, and I had some time in rehab, and yeah, it was hard getting back again, but it took a while, three, four months. But I got back, and it was really good playing again. And that I got to reach the Lyon game was a huge, huge highlight for me. And the fact that we won was also a huge, huge highlight. But all in all, we had a great half season, and now we go in the vacation with our heads up.
When we spoke last time out, we mentioned that Yuki Egimi had obviously left the club and come over here to England. Are you enjoying the added responsibility of playing more of a lone striker role for Potsdam?
Yeah, of course. The middle striker is my role, and I love playing up there. So I just got to focus hard and train hard, and eventually the goals will come, I think.
Of course, absolutely. Keep working hard. Now, at the end of January, England have a training camp out in La Manga. They've just appointed a new manager, Mark Sampson. At the end of that training camp, they have an international against your team, Norway. How much are you looking forward to that one?
I look forward to playing for the national team again. It's been a while now. I haven't played for the national team since the Euro, so it's going to be great for playing with for your country again. And meeting England as well is going to be a great opponent to play against, and I look really forward to it.
Do you think it's a big year for Norway, 2014, obviously getting to the final of a major competition when many wouldn't have expected you to do so? Do you think there's a bit of added pressure now for Norway to push on and really show people what you're made of?
I think that pressure is good for us. We did a fantastic year, and now we just got to let the pressure make us better. To say it that way, we got some big games in front of us in 2014, so some huge tasks to work on. I look really forward to it, and I think we're gonna have a good.
Excellent. Well, I'm sure it'll be a good year with the young players that you've got in that side. Ada, thank you very much again for joining us. I know you're going to write a blog for us in the coming week, so I'm sure people should look out for that. Can I take this opportunity to wish you a very Merry Christmas and the very best for 2014?
Thank you very much, Kieran.
The Women's Football Podcast, shining a light on the women's game.
So that was Ada Hegerberg, who of course mentioned her club Turbine Potsdam. So let's get the latest from Brian Maguire in his last roundup of the year.
German football has gone into its Christmas hibernation, and top of the proverbial tree is FFC Frankfurt, who have put in a devastating first half of the season and a plus 36 goal difference that's as good as an extra point. Right behind them is Turbine Potsdam, who reduced their arrears to 3 points on the last Saturday before Christmas with a very impressive performance against Essen. They won 4-0 with goals from Ada Hegerberg, Paulina Bremer and Ansano Nagasato. Point behind them, but with a game in hand, are the reigning champions Wolfsburg, who have not yet really reached their top form. At the beginning of the season, Bayern were touted as a fourth challenger for the title, but things in the last couple of months have gone very wrong for them. dropping points against Sindelfingen and Hoffenheim, getting knocked out of the cup and then beaten at home by Duisburg, it's all been compounded by losing Amber Brooks back to America. Superstar Lena Lotzen remains injured until the beginning of the next half of the season, but it looks like Bayern will not be challenging for the title this time round. The other story at the moment concerns the former European champions FCR Duisburg, who have been in financial trouble for well over a year now. It is still doubtful whether they will play in the second half of the season and under which name. The last news was that the men's club MSV Duisburg have applied for a license to play in the Frauen Bundesliga, and the ladies club have been asked their members to vote on whether to change over the name. After the holidays, German football moves indoors for the indoor tournament phase of the season. There will be many of them across the country. League action returns in the middle of February, weather permitting, with the champions Wolfsburg's game in hand against Kloppenburg.
Right, let's switch our attentions across the pond and a couple of things to talk about. The first is the Houston Dash.
Yep, the newest addition to the NWSL. Obviously, we've spoken about the Houston Dynamo potentially adding a team in the last couple of podcasts. It was officially announced in the last couple of weeks that the Dash, as I'm sure they will be commonly known, will be added and will be the ninth NWSL side coming into the league next year. Their president, Chris Canetti, was obviously very delighted when the announcement was made. He actually said on the club's website, "We are thrilled to have our very own NWSL franchise here in Houston. It is an important addition to our sports landscape and will bring added value to our community. We share the vision of this league and look forward to playing our part in making it a great success. Part of our responsibility is to grow the game of soccer, and this new team will play a significant role in that effort."
Can't argue with that, can you?
No, and I think it's going to be interesting. I'm not familiar with any or many leagues that have an odd number of teams in, so does that mean that every week a team won't play?
Yeah, it has a bye, which for me kind of takes something away. Do you know what I mean?
Well, I think when you're a supporter, you're always looking forward to your team having a game every week, aren't you? There is going to come a point where they don't because of the odd number of teams in the league. So I guess I see where you're coming from. I think you want that continuity as well, don't you? But as we've seen in other American sports, a bye can sometimes allow you to recuperate and refresh. Obviously, we don't have it over here in England, but over in the States, you know, Laura Harvey told us in one of the podcasts that she did with us, there's a lot of travelling involved for some of these teams.
Yeah, I was going to say, obviously, if you have a bye 1 week, then you can, you know, if you're Seattle, for instance, and you have the bye week, and then after that you have Houston, it means you can travel down and spend a week down in Houston. So you have a bit more regularity in terms of building up to that game. So that could be a benefit.
Yeah, and also if they have games on the East Coast, we saw last season that they try and group them together, don't they? So say, for example, they had the Boston Breakers and the New York Flash back-to-back, they could then go back to Seattle, or if it's Portland, Portland can go back to Portland, and they have that week to recuperate after what can be a lot of travelling and some quite difficult games quite close together.
So, an interesting development in the NWSL, and we will have a look at how they get their players allotted, because of course they're going to need some players. Kieran, another thing that came out of America recently was the Best 11. I'm going to rattle through this quickly because I want to get your feedback on this. In goal was Brianna Scurry. The defenders, Brandy Chastain, Joy Fawcett, Carla Overbeck, Christy Rampone. In midfield, Michelle Akers, Julie Foudy, Christine Lilly. And up front, Mia Hamm, Alex Morgan, Abby Wambeck. Now, we spoke about this before we started recording, and you said there is one player crucially missing. Who's that?
For me, it's Carly Lloyd. I think when you've scored two winning goals in two Olympic finals, I'm amazed that you can be omitted. Now, we should obviously explain that this Best 11 has been put together by members of the media, former players, coaches, current and past administrators, to commemorate and to celebrate the fact that US soccer are coming to the end of their centenary year. They've been celebrating 100 years of US soccer, so they have put together a best men's team and a best women's team. And this women's team has been put together and voted for by, as I said, members of the media, former players, etc.
I'm just going to jump in because it's 56 former players and administrators. you know, as well as the media and certain things.
And some current players as well.
Indeed. Indeed. Now, there are two players only who have 56 votes, and that's Joy Fawcett and Mia Hamm. So they're unanimous. There's one, Michelle Akers, who's got 55. So obviously, with teams like this, you get a lot of arguing. But what an honour for those players to be unanimously chosen to this team.
Unanimously chosen in a team and in a nation that is arguably the best in women's football and is the best team ever in women's football. We acknowledge that Brazil or Italy, probably Brazil, are the best team in men's football, but the US have been so dominant. They've won Olympic medals, they've won World Cups. So you're absolutely right. It is an honour. And you look at the players that have represented that country and the players that probably haven't even come anywhere near that list. I mean, as I said, Carly Lloyd, winners in two Olympic finals, gold medalist. You know, she's not even in that team. We've seen the votes and how they've been broken down. I think out of those 56 people, she got 13 votes. You know, 13 votes for a player that's won so much in her career and is such a driving force in that team and continues to be so. But where do you fit her in? That's the problem. You
know, well, because I've got to say, Christine Lilly has 55 votes as well. And Julie Foudy has 40. So a very packed midfield already.
Well, that's the problem, isn't it? You know, Christine, who do you leave out of that midfield three? You can't leave any of them out. And I don't think I would. Christine Lilly, over 350 caps. We were discussing how a lot of players don't even earn that in their club careers, let alone international. You know, Julie Foudy, an absolute legend. Michelle Akers, an absolute legend. It's difficult to replace them, but as much as I love Alex Morgan and as much as I know she's popular in America, she's 24 years old. She will go on to become one of the greatest players ever to play for America and probably in the world. But at 24, do you put her in an all-time 11? For me, I'm not too sure. I would have done a 4-4-2. I would have had Carly Lloyd in midfield and I would have had Abby Wambach and Mia Hamm as my forwards. Not 100% sure on Brandy Chastain either. I do like Brandy Chastain. Didn't see an awful lot of her when I was watching women's football because I got into it a little bit later. But is Brandy Chastain in there because of the legacy she created, scoring the winning penalty in the 99 World Cup final, or is she in there for what she actually achieved as a player? Either way, you know, she was a legend. She is a legend. She created, you know, one of the country's greatest moments in women's football, if not the greatest moment. But, yeah, some questionable decisions, and obviously we're not the only ones who question some of them.
No, absolutely. I just want to return to your point about Alex Morgan. In the list, they've got the years that they spent playing for the national team. And I think, tellingly, Alex Morgan's is 2010 to present. The next kind of nearest year is Abby Wambach in 2001. So 9 years difference. So I think you've made a good point there. But yeah, absolutely. There were, in every time people make teams like this, you end up having a little bit of a falling out, you know, down the pub, perhaps, if you try and make a dream 11. And this team was no different, was it?
No, it wasn't. And obviously a notable absentee, well, as long with Carly Lloyd, is Hope Solo. We all agree that Hope is one of the best goalkeepers ever to play the game. She's a big character. She's arguably one of, along with Alex Morgan, the most recognised player in women's football currently playing the game. And Hope obviously wasn't too pleased with Julie Foudy's team. Julie Foudy was asked to put her best 11 together based on the players that were available to select from. And Julie Foudy's, I believe, was almost identical to the one that was voted for by the panel, other than she put Shannon Box in ahead of herself. And Hope Solo rather tellingly tweeted in Julie Foudy's direction, "I think you were confused at the question. It wasn't to name your top 11 friends. This isn't the ponytail posse days anymore." So
that's naughty.
We know Hope Solo. If you read Hope Solo's book, I have. We know Hope Solo's had a few run-ins with previous players and teammates, and I'm sure she's not looking to reignite any sort of old issues that she might have. And she did later tweet, "The game has grown from 15 years ago. I have no disrespect, but the facts are the game has evolved. Players are better, and so are the teams." So she's trying to make a point there that she's not trying to disrespect anyone, but what she's trying to say is that the game moves on, And we acknowledge that players like Christine Neely and Brandy Chastain and Julie Faldi and all these players, they created a huge legacy with their achievements in the 90s and the early noughties. But I think what Hope's trying to say is that there are players of the current generation who really should be recognised for their achievements. And we've already mentioned Carly Lloyd and we've mentioned, you know, Hope and Abby Wambeck is obviously in there and Alex Morgan. And, you know, there are players that weren't even mentioned, you know, likes of Lauren Holliday.
Absolutely. And I'm sure that some of the current crop might be able to force their way into this team when they play in Canada in 2015.
The Women's Football Podcast. Follow the podcast on Twitter at WFPod.
Right, well, Kieran, we've been neglecting the W League, haven't we?
Which is a bit naughty.
It is a little bit. However, we must say that our friends over at the Women's Game have been covering it superbly so far this season. So make sure you do give them a follow. They are found on Twitter, at the Women's Game. And if you need any information on the W League, they are the girls to speak to. However, given that it's Christmas, we thought a little gift for our listeners. We'd track down the very best of the W League. So why don't you introduce our third and final guest?
Yeah, we were very, very lucky that a friend of the show, Alicia Ferguson, who's obviously been on before, is good friends and is a former teammate of Lisa Devanna. Obviously, Lisa is arguably the most high-profile player in Australia at the current time. She played in America with Sky Blue last year. She's currently playing for Melbourne Victory down in Australia, and we thought it would be a good opportunity to get on the show. So Ish has kindly done an interview on the back of a recent announcement of some Hall of Fame teams. Lisa Devanna was actually named in the All-Star team for Australia between the years 2000 and 2012. Unfortunately, Ish wasn't in it, so Ish, maybe you can explain why on another show when you're on. But here, rather than me waffling on, here is Ish having a chat with Lisa Devanna.
All right, I'm here with Matilda's player, Lisa Devanna, who has 82 caps and 31 goals. Devanna, how the bloody hell are you?
I'm good. Yourself, mate.
Yeah. I'm just loving your Skype profile pic. That you look really, really happy in it.
Just embrace it. Just embrace it.
It's scaring me looking at it, put it that way.
That's not very nice. That was probably my best angle.
I know. Maybe a smile wouldn't go astray, mate.
Got me by surprise.
Yeah, exactly. So, lots of stuff's been happening. You've made the move to Melbourne Victory. How's the W League going this season?
Well, obviously the first game was
a flogging.
Bit of a frustrating
game. You got flogged. What happened in that game?
Well, obviously, you know, it's a bit different when you go from it's like a chain reaction. You know, you go from club level, then you play W League, and it's the same with, you know, international level to W League. It's just a big gap in between those two. Yeah. You know, the difference in competition. So obviously, we had a lot of club players that haven't played at the W League level, so it was a bit frustrating because
you got flogged 5-1.
Yeah, we got flogged.
Pretty simple as that. I mean, tough start to the season. I think everyone thought Melbourne were going to be pretty strong. You got some up and coming young players in your team. Unfortunately, poor Ash Brown has done her ACL, hasn't she?
Oh, that was just horrible. I actually felt sick when she did that.
And it was like, right at the end of the game, wasn't it?
Well, it was the last few seconds of the game, and I think she's just run back, and I think she's just trying to change direction, and I think it's just popped. Oh,
yeah.
And she went down, and she was ready. Like, I've never, touch wood, I've never done an ACL, but just her reaction, she knew that she's actually done it. And, you know, I was just in shock because, you know, we talk about dedication and professionalism. Yeah. Now the standards in the national team, and Ash would come to training half an hour early and just practice just on things she needs to work on before she played that first game. So it's, you know, it's heartbreaking to see that.
That is. It's a shame. And, you know, Kaya did hers literally coming on as a sub in that US game. As soon as she went down, you know, seeing how Kaya went down in that game, I think she knew. I definitely knew, having done two ACLs myself. What is it? I know everyone's got so many theories about it. Okay, so I don't know, overtraining, too much pressure on the joints. Like, it's just, it's gutting to see so many young players snapping their ACLs.
It's quite weird because I feel like you hear more about ACLs than I did a few years back. So
yeah, and at a time when they're trying to prevent them so much, yeah, they've got so many, you know, strategies in place to prevent them, but these young girls just keep doing them. I don't know. It's a hard one. I know they talk about the hard grounds as possibly being a factor, which we know in Australia, and you could probably play on your sneakers. Some of those grounds are like concrete.
Yeah, well, our field's like that. No wonder. I don't know if it's my old age or my
birthday. I know. You did just turn 29. How was your birthday? Did you have a good birthday?
No, I actually got drug tested. I was supposed to go out to dinner and I spent the whole night some lady following me around. So that was,
isn't that, that how was you a, usually a spend your birthdays night. Anyway?
An old lady following me around. Like, yeah. That's how I like that. It's my, you know, surprise stripper.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Unfortunately, just, yeah, you were actually the one stripping. Yeah.
The other
one. I was spewing. Well, that's not very nice. The big 3-0 next year, you are getting old. You are now probably, what, close to the oldest player in the Matildas team now? You must be getting close to that. How is it going from being the little cheeky youngster running around terrorising everyone to now being the more experienced, mature player still terrorising people?
it's different because I didn't think my life would go so quickly like it has in the football world. You know, at the time when you're at that age, 19, you think, oh, I'm okay. I've got plenty of years to go. But now, you know, you're 29 and you think, wow, where did it all go? Yeah. But it's different. I think Hesterine's given me more of a leadership role, so I have to be more responsible because if I do stuff, it looks bad on her and looks bad on the team. So it's a good thing. I think it's worked because I'm a bit more hesitant to what I write on Twitter or say in public. So,
and I think you did really well to show a lot of restraint in that whole, you know, article and stuff about you and Elise Perry. I mean, it was all a bit of a storm in a teacup, wasn't it? And it was interesting that you said about, you know, Hester in the Matildas coach giving you a bit more of a leadership role and stuff like that. I mean, I've played with you in the past. And I've seen the best and I've seen the worst of you as well. And I know that a lot of the time you are your own worst enemy and you take it out. And I wouldn't have necessarily thought, I personally thought with Tommy as our coach, you know, he gave us all a lot of personal responsibility and didn't really need to, you know, come down on us really hard because we were all pretty experienced players and able to make the right decisions. But you definitely see that you've changed from having Tommy now with Hesterine. Like, just a different... Is that because of Hesterine's different approach to coaching the team?
I think a lot of it, like, Tommy was a very good coach tactically.
Yeah.
But I think a lot of the young players having so much freedom, they took advantage of that. They didn't know what their boundaries was.
Yeah.
And that used to frustrate me because I'm such a routine, you know, structured person and I think, you know, focusing and, you know, being ready for a game or training is the key to most success in football. With Hesterine, she's put that in place and it's very regimented and very strict, but that's something that I think we need at the moment. You know, I think like a bit to earn sort of a trust in the fact to we earn and show her that we are capable of playing football and we've, you know, a lot more freedom. I think it's going to take a bit of time for that to happen if that sort of makes sense.
Yeah, and how are the young players reacting to it? Like, are they kind of taking it on board or do they? Because for me, personally, you know, as a player, sometimes when it's like being back at school and sometimes players, when you've got so many restrictions on you and so many rules and regulations, then it's almost like you revert back to being a naughty school kid to then do stuff to try and get away with it. I could be completely wrong, and I'm just saying, you know, I know sometimes that people sometimes will embrace, some players are going to embrace that and go, yep, brilliant, we need it structured, we need this and that. But do you think there's any possibility that some of the players are going to go, well, stuff this, I'm still an adult. They may be a little bit younger, but they are all experienced players.
Well, you know, of course at first it was tough. Even on me it was a bit tough. I actually told her, I can't be around them all the time. I need my, you know, walks on my own and do my own stuff. And she understands that. But I think it was tough at first. But I feel now you're starting to see the team gel a little bit more. We're a bit more becoming a bit more cohesion. There's a bit more cohesion in the team, a bit more gelling towards it.
Well, that's good. I mean, that's good. If you can see that transition, it's always going to be a transition.
Definitely. Even with me, I feel like I can start talking a bit more to the young ones and be a bit more myself. But also, you know, we're at the position now with the depth in the team. If you don't like it, you go. There's another player that can replace you. So you can't. You're not a standout. Like, you know, when you look back at, you know, 5 years ago, you know, we didn't have that depth. And, like, that is your starting spot. So there was no one that was competing with you. And if there was, it wasn't – they were so far off. Now, if you don't abide by it, if you don't like it, then, you know, there's going to be another player that's going to replace you and probably do a better job. So it's worked in that favour that, you know, if you don't like it, then you've got no choice.
Too bad. Yeah, and I mean, it's amazing how many – youngsters coming through these days, you know, just technically, tactically, physically as well, they're miles ahead of, and I guess that's just the continued development of the sport, really. Have you seen this year in W League? Because I noticed a massive difference. When I came home last year and I think I watched the final, I noticed a massive difference. Every single year that the W League has been in place, the improvement, I think, has been quite substantial. Are you still seeing that this year?
I think this year will probably be the best season yet. I totally agree with you. I think last year, I think a lot of it is because we had an extra team come in and the structure of it was a bit disorganised, but now clubs have invested a bit more time and investing in players, and there's a bit more money involved for them to get, you know, bigger players. It'd be very interesting to see who the top four would be this year.
Yeah, it definitely seems like it's a lot closer as well. There's more teams competing for those top spots, which is pretty exciting. And what about, so next year, Asia Cup is in Vietnam in May. So that's basically Australia's World Cup qualification. You guys have got Japan, Vietnam and Jordan. What's the preparation going to be? Are any of the Aussie players going to be allowed to go and play overseas next year? Or is there kind of a bit of a kibosh on that and everyone has to stay back in Australia?
That's it. No one's allowed to go overseas till after the Asian Cup.
Right.
I really don't know what I feel for that.
Because you've played overseas, and so is it more the thinking of being, you know, is the plan to then after the W League finishes to have really regular camps every so often?
I think that's what they're doing in place now. It's going to be very full on till May this year. No, well, you know, 2014. Mm. And then I imagine if once we qualify, how much worse it's going to be the following year because it's a bigger event.
So after the Asia Cup, I know I can kind of understand it up until the Asia Cup because there's not too long between the end of the W League season. So even if you're going away, then you're just going to be coming back a couple of months later anyway. But will that be the same then after the Asia Cup, then leading up to the World Cup in 2015?
What do you mean? So like so after the next sort of W League?
Australia, or will you then have the opportunity to go and play overseas somewhere? And will the other players have that opportunity after the Asia Cup? And that's, you know, assuming that we qualify, which I think we should do.
Well, I tell you, if we don't qualify, I retire with the teams that are in there. So, I think it's a tough one because, like, if you want to go overseas in June, you know, it's very tough for a team to want to pick up somebody that's missed half a season. Do you get what I mean?
Yeah.
Probably invested in a player. So it's a tough one unless you're someone that they need at the time. But, like, when a team's planning a team, they're planning a team for, you know, the next 2 years most likely. So it's a tough one, like, to get my head around. But, we'll just have to wait and see. I think it'll be the same for the next 3 years personally because – well, we've got our Olympic qualifier, so I'm assuming after the World Cup we have Olympic qualifiers, so I doubt that no one would be allowed to go in 2015 anyway.
The Women's Football Podcast.
Listen to the podcast via SoundCloud.
SoundCloud.com/WFpod.
So there we go, Lisa Devanna. And you will have noticed from the abrupt ending of that interview that we have a little bit more of that chat that Alicia had with Lisa, and that will be coming up in another podcast early in 2014. So there we go, end of the show. And just got to quickly mention our competition in partnership with Yale Averbusch. We're still taking entries, sending us your videos of you doing your best trick with a football. You can get involved via Twitter at WFPod or by email thewfpod@gmail.com. And Kieran, given that this is the last one of 2013, we've got plenty of thank yous to say, haven't we?
Yeah, it's gone so quick, hasn't it? I can't believe that we're 9 months old. And obviously, we would like to thank people. We passed 10,000 downloads of the podcast in the last few weeks, which is a mammoth landmark for us. And we are extremely grateful to every single person that has downloaded a version or just had a listen to a snippet. You know, we didn't really know how this would go. We started out in March, so we have got a lot of people to thank. I think Alicia Ferguson is probably someone we really do need to thank properly, because big she's time. Been a massive, massive support since we started with this. And you know, big congratulations to Helen Skelton, who was obviously a guest presenter a couple of months ago. She got married over the weekend, so a big thanks to her and congratulations. And just to all the players as well, you know, we've had so many good players on the show who've been all brilliant in their own way, you know, very insightful, very different in every single way. So, but I think most importantly, thanks to the listeners and people who've read the blog and who've downloaded the podcast. And, you know, we want it to be, you know, carrying on into 2014 and getting even bigger and better.
Yeah, absolutely. You've just taken the words out of my mouth. Plans are afoot to make sure that 2014 is bigger and better on the Women's Football Podcast. But as 2013 draws to a close, we're going to say cheerio for the last time.
And Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
The Women's Football Podcast, shining a light on the women's game.